you just stop for 2 seconds and think about what we're reading, it should just completely take our breath away to imagine what it must have been like to have actually been there when he's feeding the masses with 5 loaves and 2 fish, when he's walking on water in front of his disciples. Like, those things are just amazing, amazing reminders of his power.
Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. Thanks for tuning in. Like always, get connected and stay connected by visiting calvarybible.com. Click your campus and find out what is happening in your neck of the woods. We have a great show for you, but before anything else, go to YouTube and the comments, leave a question for us. We'd love to answer that in the coming shows in the next couple weeks. This week, we have a great guest in the digital space, Perry Marshall. Welcome, Perry.
Thanks, Jay. Great to be here.
Yeah, man.
In the digital space.
It is in the digital space. I'm actually in the office. So many people are probably listening to the weekly get recorded.
Yeah.
It's how the sausage
I'm in my basement.
People.
Yeah.
No. You're not in the basement. You're probably overlooking the flat iron. It's because you live in, and work in Boulder. I'm in the bunk bed, which is historically known as Thomas and I's office we share. Cubicle space.
Excellent.
Yeah. How are you doing, man?
Good. Yeah, doing great. It's a beautiful day today and, you know, middle of the week. So trying to stay on task, stay on target. But yeah, things are going well.
Yeah. Thanks for taking a moment to be with us on the weekly this week.
Of course.
So good to have you, man. How's your season of campus pastor life? Preaching quite often these days.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about all that?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Man, we have such a great team in Boulder, and I'm just grateful for the people that I get to work alongside. They are so gifted and equipped well to do the jobs that they're doing, and it's just a blessing. And, you know, having an environment that we have here where you have so many great volunteer leaders too, it's an amazing place to be a part of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, does it feel like y'all have skipped a beat or pause for anything, or it just feels like a normal week in and week out after Tom has stepped into sabbatical?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think you can ever feel like you didn't skip a beat when you have somebody who's been here as long as Tom has, and when, you know, he had led at the capacity that he'd been leading for so long. So yeah, we've skipped beats, but again, the team here has carried us along, carried us through it, and it's been great.
Good, man. Really good. All right. What is your favorite thing to do in the fall outside of work?
Yeah. Well, I go to a lot of cross-country races and concerts.
Yeah.
That's what I do as a dad.
Yeah. Deadline.
Yeah. I don't know that. I guess the cross-country racing is unique to the fall. Concerts are not. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of activities surrounding our family. And it is, it's beautiful time of the year, you know, to be able to see all of the leaves changing and all of that. So it's really fun to be outside. And I like to personally will go out for a run or, you know, do some kind of exercising outdoors, take advantage of the beautiful weather.
Yeah, man. It was a great season here in Colorado called the fall.
It is. Yeah, totally.
All right. So we're in this Gospel of John series. We've just approached John 6. What do we need to know heading into John 6 that we might not anticipate?
Yeah, I think with John chapter 6, one of the things that's pretty obvious from where we were this last Sunday is just that Jesus is displaying these really just, I think, hard to imagine supernatural abilities, supernatural powers in some very familiar stories that we probably heard over and over if you've been in the church before. And it's easy to kind of lose the wonder of it because it can be so familiar. Yeah. But if you just stop for 2 seconds and think about what we're reading, it should just completely take our breath away to imagine what it must have been like to have actually been there when he's feeding the masses with 5 loaves and 2 fish, when he's walking on water in front of his disciples. Like, those things are just amazing, amazing reminders of his power.
Yeah, that's a really good reminder because so many of us have had these stories, maybe even since childhood. We remember them in sort of flannel graph moments within Sunday school long ago. They're in their children's story Bibles because they're some of the best stories. Yeah. How do you sort of transition from that sort of category of these stories to what John is really trying to communicate in his gospel about Jesus?
Yeah, I think it just comes from paying attention to what's going on in the text, really, you know, but to certainly focus on the miracles themselves, but to be able to read them in their setting, in the context mm-hmm. that they're showing up, and to recognize that Jesus isn't just doing things for these abstract reasons or reasons of mm-hmm. just trying to impress the crowd, but he has a very distinct purpose in mind, and those things are in the text if we'll pay attention mm-hmm. to it, and to see that he's trying to communicate something through what he's doing. And that's where really the message and the core of it is found, just by paying attention to those details.
Yeah, that's really good, Perry. Thanks for that encouragement to us. You know, you started off your sermon, and how does the sermon illustrate the challenge of trusting in Jesus today in a skeptical culture? So a skeptic mm-hmm. is sitting on Sunday morning or even listening to maybe these stories for the very first time. How does that really challenge sort of the skeptical nature of who we are as a people?
Yeah, that is one thing I tried to kind of drill down into early on. And just the fact that we live in a culture where I think we have had many, many experiences and encounters where, for various reasons, trust has been broken or betrayed in our own human experience day in and day out. I mean, we are, you know, fallible human beings. And it's just, I think, a very universal experience that you've been disappointed by somebody, that you have found somebody to be less than maybe what they told you they were, or even they, and that might just be by accident almost, but then you may have also had experiences where people intentionally tried to mislead you. And, you know, disappointment after disappointment in life, sooner or later, we kind of build up a shell around that to protect ourselves. And we can, part of that shell can be that we don't trust people anymore, or we grow cynical. Mm-hmm. And if you bring that attitude over to Jesus, then you will miss the fact that Jesus is somebody who you can trust without any reservation. And so I brought that up in the sermon and bring that up here then to just say that Jesus is trying to show us and reassure us that we don't have to have those same kind of protective barriers that we might put up around us when it comes to him. He's somebody who we can always trust. He will never let us down. He may not always do exactly what we wanted him to do when we wanted him to do it, but we can trust that he has our best intentions in mind.
Yeah, I think that's a great setup for this John 6 area of the passage, you know, especially in our today's culture. What is, you know, I always ask this question with the preachers. What are some things you left behind that you wish you could have picked up? Maybe you're going to pick them up this week because we're in the second half of John 6. But, you know, one of the things that I noticed specifically about this passage that I hadn't noticed before is like the place and time it's used in the sense of Passover.
Yeah.
So, you know, John has four times the use of maybe Passover. Mm-hmm. In his text. And how does that sort of play in with sort of how we read John 6?
Yeah.
What we should be paying attention to.
Yeah, I think that's in verse 4 where he mentions that. And it's not a throwaway line. It's not inconsequential. Mm-hmm. He's very deliberately pointing out the time of year that this is taking place.
Yeah.
And John has this as kind of a whole pattern or structure throughout his account of Jesus's life, where he's looking at these major festivals that Israel had, and he is using those as the backdrop to make statements about the truth of who Jesus is. And in this passage in particular, Jesus is making the claim that he's doing something very Passover-like in what he's doing in feeding the crowd and walking on water. And then there are these other little things throughout the text too, like the grumbling of the people that we'll read about this coming Sunday, the fact that Jesus goes up on a mountain with his disciples, you know, all of these things are reminders, should remind us of the Passover. And I think they're meant to remind us of the Passover, that Jesus is doing something in their day that is very reminiscent of what had happened over 1,000 years before.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I think that was one of the unique things of the text for me this week that really hit a little different. Okay, so we talk about, you talked about provision and deliverance from Jesus and these sort of two ideas of these two miracles, one being the feeding, the other one walking on water. How do we really apply the feeding of the 5,000 to like our everyday life as a Christian?
Yeah.
So when you get hungry in the afternoon, Jay, and all you have is a granola bar. Yeah. No, I think that what the application to our life is not that we expect a similar miracle to happen necessarily, but that we would expect that the same person, Jesus, who performed the miracle then is also active in our own lives and aware of our own needs today, just like he was back in this account from John chapter 6. And so we have the confidence that, first of all, Jesus knows our needs and he has the ability, the power to address those needs just like he did back then. He can do that today. Now, maybe not in the same exact way. He might do something very different in our lives. And we might need him to do something very different in our lives. You know, food scarcity is not our problem for most of us in the United States in the 21st century, like it was back then. And so we need Jesus's power in our lives in a different way, perhaps. But we can be confident that Jesus is active and able to do things that are just as needed in our own lives.
Yeah, I think you even used the word abundant. Yeah. Abundantly, how much he increased in the abundance of what it was. Because they gather up, which is sort of a Passover thing again. It's like the 12 baskets, right? Of leftovers.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's kind of reminiscent of the wedding in Cana when he's turning all of the water into wine. And it's like this lavish amount that's over, you know, above and beyond what it was actually needed, more than likely. And the wedding in Cana, and definitely here in this account too. It demonstrates some of the joy and abundance of God's kingdom.
I love that, Perry. Let's talk more about that, because I didn't think about that hyperlink until just recently with this conversation. And it's like, man, how often do we have scarcity mindset when it comes to like faith, right?
Right.
I don't know if God's going to show up. If he does, he's just going to do the bare minimal.
Yeah.
What we get from these stories is like, no, he does more than abundant.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could even be viewed like, man, this is wasteful. Look at all of these leftovers. But it's just a demonstration again that Jesus can just say, hey, there's way more that I can provide than what you can even imagine. And, you know, don't put limits on what we think that God can give us. He's able to do so much more. And of course, that's picked up by Paul when he's writing and talking about, this just the power of God to do far more than we could ever imagine. And that's the kind of confidence that we need to keep in our minds when we're thinking about the needs that we have in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good, man. That's a great, I love where that sort of went. So, okay, the second miracle is Jesus walking on water. The question I have for you is, how does this play into like Peter's when he walks on water? Is this, you know, there's a couple of moments on the Sea of Galilee where Jesus encounters his disciples in boats.
Yeah.
How is this distinct? How is this similar? You know, what are ways we should be thinking about this specific miracle?
Right. Yeah, it is really interesting because this is one of the accounts, the feeding of the 5,000 and Jesus walking on the water, that is also in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. There aren't many accounts that show up in all four Gospels before you get to the cross and the resurrection, but this is one of them. And for whatever reason, John does not include Peter in this scene, while he is a part of the same kind of episode in the other Gospels. And I think the reason for that has to do with John is just for his own purposes, doesn't need to include that. He's trying to communicate something about Jesus in this scene. And, you know, I can only guess as to why he included only what he included, but it probably would have to do with the fact that John is trying to give just undivided attention to what Jesus is doing in this moment. by walking on the water and demonstrating Jesus's power and ability to deliver them. And in some ways, perhaps it would be a little bit of a distraction. Or John is probably also just thinking that the readers of his own gospel are already familiar with the story to know that this also happened in that scene.
Yeah, that's a really good. I'm glad we're talking about that, because that's one of those questions I had after Sunday. It was like, well, how does this all play a part together? Right. That's good. So, you know, John mentions that Jesus, well, the boat is really deep inside the middle of the sea. So it's not like Jesus walked on water right at the shoreline, 10 feet to the boat. Like, they're out in the middle of this raging thing. Yeah. What are some reflections you thought of, like, sort of the environment in which we encounter Jesus? What, you know, how are we supposed to sort of think about that as readers?
Yeah, I think what stood out to me is the fact that the very same conditions, the very same circumstances that are keeping the disciples stuck in the middle of the lake, perhaps you could say that they are in some kind of danger. I don't know if that's going beyond what John is trying to communicate about the situation, but they are definitely stuck, and they're not making progress getting across. And Jesus is the one who is able to demonstrate in this, you know, it doesn't get any more vivid than what he's doing, that he is more powerful than all of those circumstances that are keeping them where they're at. And as he's doing that, he's coming to them in those circumstances, not just pulling them out of it. In fact, I think it was Thomas and Erie who said something to the effect of how this is kind of demonstrative of the fact that we have a, not a storm-free life, but a storm-proof life. I think I thought that was such a beautiful way to put it, that Jesus is meeting them in the conditions. He's not just merely changing the conditions, but he's coming to them in that very place.
That's super important for us to understand as we read ourselves even into the story. It's like, we might not experience storms right now. We have probably in the past. We will in the future. How does Jesus actually meet us in those to really do something miraculous?
Totally.
I think it's really important. Okay, so the sermon mentioned the decline in trust in institutions, churches. How can, as we, a community, work to rebuild trust in the sort of the local church, the expression of sort of the kingdom of God, where we live, work, and play. How does sort of John 6 instruct us on that?
Well, I think above all, to me, I would think that one of the biggest safeguards for the church when it comes to ensuring that we can have a trusting kind of community and a community that's worth trusting in is that we keep Jesus as the centerpiece of our community. You know, part of our mission statement is that we're building Christ-centered communities of people fully devoted to loving God and loving others. It's not pastor-centered. It's not, you know, in Boulder, it's not Perry-centered. In Erie, it's not Thomas-centered. It's not Zach-centered in Thornton, but it's Christ-centered. And he is the one who we are calling people to put their trust in, not into any human being, not into any figure other than Christ himself. That's who we want to keep our focus on, and understand that we will let people down. It's guaranteed. Just give us time, man. We will let each other down, but Jesus will not. He is the only one among us who is 100% trustworthy all the time. And I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, that's a really good word, Perry, to us as we think about how to live this out together at Calvary. Is that we continue to build everything upon Jesus Christ and center everything we do upon that. It's great.
Yeah.
So let's talk about sort of stepping aside from John 6. What are you sort of learning in your personal devotion as you study the Gospel of John that's just really sticking out to you the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I sometimes feel like I'm preaching the same sermon every Sunday as we go through this series. Because I just see on repeat this idea of Jesus is revealing his identity. And, you know, some of that is probably just the fact that we've given attention to chapter 20, verses 30 and 31, where John has his purpose statement for writing, when he talks right. about how, you know, there were many other signs that he could have included in this, but these are recorded so that we may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing we may have life in his name. So when you have that in your mind on repeat, then it's really easy to kind of see the whole book through that lens. But what is he doing in chapter 6? Well, he's revealing himself, again, his power through these different miracles, and showing that, hey, he's the one who can give us this life. He is the Messiah, the Son of God. I mean, it's obvious through what he's able to do. And as he's demonstrating that week after week after week, then I think that's the big thing that just stands out, that Jesus is somebody who we can trust without any reservation, and he is the one who can deliver us from everything that we face. And of course, the biggest thing of all is from sin itself. And he's the only one who can deliver salvation to us. So those are the things. I know those are like Sunday school answers, but I love how every week is a different passage. Every week is a different text. And we see Jesus interacting with people, doing different things, teaching different ways. But that same message is behind the heart of it all. And hopefully that just reinforces in all of us a deeper faith. Or if we're investigating, trying to explore Christian faith, hopefully that's something that just builds confidence to say, wow, I can really take Jesus at his word, because look at what he's able to do and how he's able to demonstrate and teach in a way that is like nothing else.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm really thankful for that conversation, Perry. Yeah. Thankful for you pointing us over and over to that reality of who Jesus is. And you're right. Through the Gospel of John, we're going to be preaching the same sermon over and over again. And that's because it is this centrality of who we are and what type of people we want to be. And that is around Jesus Christ. So, so thankful for you, Perry. Thanks so much for the conversation. Thanks for jumping in the digital sphere and pausing your work week. And what should we look forward to in the back half of John 6 as we get ready?
Jesus is using one of the famous I am statements. He's, you know, taking this miracle that he's just performed in feeding the 5,000 and using that as the launching pad for talking about himself as the bread of life. And, you know, just thinking about that imagery of what does bread do for us, sustains us, you know, again, demonstrates God's provision to us, and how Jesus is the one who is doing that in a way that goes well beyond just offering us food for our stomachs, but he's the one who nourishes our souls and gives us life in an ultimate eternal sense. So he's teaching through that, and there's some deep waters, no pun intended, out of that teaching.
Yeah.
So there is it's a big passage in front of us this week, but it'll be a great text.
Oh, so looking forward to it, man. Thanks so much. Yeah. All right, Calvary, as we wrap up today, I just want to continue to leave with the beginning of John as sort of our blessing as we move on into our work week. John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Keep those in your back pocket this week as we travel from here to there, and we look forward to meeting with you once again and getting around the idea of Jesus being the bread of life this week at Calvary. Like always, visit calvarybible.com, get connected, stay connected there. And we look forward to seeing you very soon. Have a great day.